You've probably heard that you should be eating more seafood. Now, my doctor tells me that all the time. It's a good idea. But maybe the seafood counter is intimidating to you, or you aren't quite sure how to prepare it. That's why you need Wild Alaskan Company. The founder comes from a long line of Alaskan commercial fishermen, so they are experts in getting the highest quality, sustainably sourced seafood right to your plate. They believe that what you eat matters, and I do too. And as a member of Wild Alaskan Company, you'll receive a variety of delicious, perfectly portioned, wild-caught seafood delivered right to your door. And you get access to their team as well. For any questions about recipes, cooking tips, what a great idea. It's not just buying fish, you get the support to cook it as well. They are so confident in the taste and quality of Alaska seafood that they offer a 100% money-back guarantee. That's a pretty good deal. Change or pause your delivery date anytime so they make it easy. Right now, get $15 off your first box of wild-caught seafood when you visit wildalaskancompany.com/justnews for $15 off your first box. That's a great deal. So go today to wildalaskancompany.com/justnews. You'll get the best prices, the best food, and help cooking some great seafood.
Hi, everybody. Cheryl Atkison here with another edition of the Cheryl Atkison podcast at justthenews.com. Today, we're going to examine four seemingly separate events involving coronavirus and disinformation, and then we'll connect the dots to see how they all relate to the managed news environment that I've been writing and speaking about. Some of the biggest news of this pandemic recently went virtually unnoticed. I mean, part of the story was discussed, but not the implications. I'm talking about the news that it's almost unheard of for people to transmit COVID-19 outdoors. Even CDC admitted that this week. The actual stat that's being used is it happens less than 0.1% of the time. What the New York Times said was statistically insignificant. If that's true, that means nearly every case of COVID-19 was transmitted inside. And so today, I think it's reasonable to ask whether the stay-at-home orders, going by the government's own statistics now, whether the stay-at-home orders resulted in a large number of the COVID deaths. Of course, that could have been, and in fact was, foreseen by some health experts, but it wasn't widely debated or discussed beforehand, where we could perhaps arrive at the facts soon enough to make a difference in terms of lives lost and our economy destroyed. We're going to expand on all of this by examining four seemingly separate events involving disinformation and medical information, and then we'll connect the dots to see how they all relate to the managed news environment that I've been writing and speaking about. Event number one, and this is really important, has to do with Dr. Anthony Fauci's wordplay when he testified to Congress this past week and was being asked questions about gain-of-function research and taxpayer funding for it. First, I'll play the exchange. Senator Rand Paul, a medical doctor, by the way, is questioning Fauci about gain-of-function research. For your background, gain-of-function research is controversial because scientists take a virus that's currently harmless to people, in this case, bat coronavirus, and they genetically manipulate the virus or engineer it to make it infectious in people. Why would they do such a thing? Well, they're taking an educated guess as to what kind of virus might ultimately naturally become infectious in people over time. They're trying to jumpstart the process, make it happen faster in a lab so that they can make a vaccine and perhaps other therapeutics to treat it. They're trying to get ahead of the game. But many scientists say it's super dangerous because lab accidents happen, releases happen. They're not all that rare over time. And if a gain-of-function research virus that has been artificially made to be infectious in people escapes from the lab, as some scientists have put it, who knows what sort of pandemic it could cause. So that's the background. And we know factually that the United States, U.S. taxpayers, were funding joint research of this nature with China, specifically with the lead virologist at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, Xi Jingli. She's the woman you may have heard referred to by her nickname as Batwoman. And it's important to note that As Fauci has spoken against the idea that COVID-19 could be something that escaped from a lab in China, he has not disclosed this conflict of interest, meaning taxpayer money from his institute at the National Institutes of Health and from NIH generally, that taxpayer money has gone to this kind of research. So that's something you need to know as you hear this clip. And one more thing you need to know as you listen is that Fauci is answering questions very carefully, adding words here and there intended to give a certain misimpression. The misimpression, I think, that the U.S. and the National Institutes of Health never had anything to do with gain-of-function research. But as he answers, he's switching around and conflating different research and studies in his answers without saying so, thus carefully qualifying his answers in a way that might escape most casual observers. So let's listen to this. The first voice you'll hear is Senator Rand Paul, and then you will hear Dr. Fauci.
The SARS virus had a 15% mortality. We're fighting a pandemic that has about a 1% mortality. Can you imagine if a SARS virus that's been juiced up and had viral proteins added to it, to the spike protein, if that were released accidentally? Dr. Fauci, do you still support funding of the NIH funding of the lab in Wuhan?
Senator Paul, with all due respect, you are entirely and completely incorrect that the NIH has not ever and does not now fund gain-of-function research in the Wuhan Institute.
Do they fund Dr. Barrick?
We do not fund.
Do you fund Dr. Barrick's gain of function research?
Dr. Barrick does not doing gain of function research. And if it is, it's according to the guidelines and it is being conducted in North Carolina, not
in China. You don't think inserting a bat virus spike protein that he got from the Wuhan Institute into the SARS virus is gain of function?
That is not.
You would be in the minority because at least 200 scientists have signed a statement from the Cambridge Working Group saying that it is gain of function.
Well, it is not. And if you look at the grant and you look at the progress reports, it is not gain of function, despite the fact that people tweet that.
So do you still support sending money to the Wuhan Virology Institute?
We do not send money now to the Wuhan Virology
Institute. Do you support sending money? We did, under your tutelage. We were sending it through EcoHealth. It was a sub-agency and a sub-grant. Do you support that the money from NIH that was going to the Wuhan Institute?
Let me explain to you why that was done. The SARS-CoV-1 originated in bats in China. It would have been irresponsible of us if we did not investigate the bat viruses.
I'm going to play part of that again and add a couple of comments as you listen to the words being used here again, starting with Senator Paul.
Dr. Fauci, do you still support funding of the NIH funding of the lab in Wuhan?
Senator Paul, with all due respect, you are entirely and completely incorrect.
Okay, so his answer to the direct question, does Dr. Fauci still support funding of the lab in Wuhan? And Fauci answers, you are entirely incorrect, I think is designed to give the impression that the U.S. and NIH does not and has never supported or funded the lab in Wuhan, which is not true.
That the NIH has not ever and does not now fund gain-of-function research in the Wuhan Institute.
Do they fund?
Okay, so again, he's adding some qualifiers. I think he's trying to leave the impression that the NIH in the U.S. doesn't fund gain-of-function research and has never done so. But then he adds the words, in the Wuhan Institute of Virology. That's a pretty specific qualifier. In other words, we haven't funded gain-of-function research that occurred in this specific place.
That the NIH has not ever and does not now fund gain-of-function research in the Wuhan Institute.
Do they fund Dr. Barrick?
So now Dr. Paul is asking whether the U.S. funds Dr. Barrick, who conducted gain-of-function research. He's a scientist at the University of North Carolina. Published research specifically discloses that he, along with the lead virologist at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, partner together on gain-of-function research funded by the National Institutes of Health in 2015 and beyond?
We do not fund.
Do you fund Dr. Barrett's gain of function research?
Dr. Barrett does not doing gain of function research.
So he's using present tense there. We know for a fact that Dr. Barrett has done gain of function research, at least in the past. And now when Dr. Fauci is answering the question, he says Dr. Barrett does not currently, in other words, do gain of function research.
Do they fund Dr. Barrett?
We do not fund.
Do you fund Dr. Barrett's gain of function research?
Dr. Barrett does not doing gain of function research, and if it is, it's according to the guidelines, and it is being conducted in North Carolina.
So again, he says that Dr. Barrett is not doing gain of function research when we know that, at least in the past, Dr. Barrett has, and that the research was funded by NIH. Then you heard Dr. Fauci say, and if he is, it's not being conducted at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. He says it's being conducted in North Carolina, which he says is quite different.
I don't think inserting a bat virus spike protein that he got from the Wuhan Institute into the SARS virus is gain of function.
That is
not the minority, because at least 200 scientists have signed a statement from the Cambridge Working Group saying that it is gain of function.
Well, it is not.
So again, now they're debating what is gain of function, while omitting the fact or overlooking the fact that in the past, at least, there was explicitly gain of function research conducted that was defined as such, including by NIH, in a Dr. Barrett study that was published in 2015 and allowed to continue beyond that.
You look at the grant and you look at the progress reports, it is not gain of function.
So now again, Fauci is, to me, deflecting the question by referring to some specific grants related to a later study that he's saying did not have anything to do with gain of function, while not acknowledging the separate research that NIH and his institute specifically did fund with Dr. Barrett and the Wuhan Institute of Virology's lead virologist that was gain of function research. To me, that's a pretty important fact in this equation that I think Fauci is wordsmithing around to leave the impression that there never was any gain-of-function research paid for by U.S. tax dollars.
The fact that people tweet that,
so do you still support sending money to the Wuhan Virology Institute?
We do not send money now to the Wuhan.
Okay, you heard that again. Now, Dr. Paul is asking, once again, kind of what he asked in the beginning, does Fauci support sending U.S. tax money to the Wuhan Virology Institute? And Fauci answers by saying, we do not send money. Now, he adds that word now in sort of a tiny little voice.
Do you still support sending money to the Wuhan Virology Institute?
We do not send money now to the Wuhan Virology Institute.
Now, if an honest exchange of information were going on, it would sound far different in my view. Senator Rand Paul is asking a series of questions. Dr. Fauci knows what he's getting at, and he certainly could have been clear instead of obtuse and said, yes, we are on the record as having funded gain-of-function research by the National Institutes of Health and my institute specifically in the time prior to and at some point after 2015. Yes, we did use taxpayer money for that. But, he could argue, that research, in conjunction with the Wuhan Institute of Virology, was conducted on U.S. soil at the University of North Carolina. Therefore, we don't think it's a viable suspect in any theory that COVID-19 was released from that lab. That's the answer that he could have given if he were not trying to, as it seems to me, give the misimpression that the U.S. never funded any gain-of-function research with China or anybody else. Why do I think this is important? Well, Fauci is a top public health official who's quite frankly been confused, confusing, and just plain wrong about so much with the COVID epidemic. What kind of confidence in his words does it exude to know how he's wordsmithing here to give an impression that doesn't accurately reflect the heart of the matter? Important event number two, which I alluded to at the beginning of this podcast, really important information. CDC's comment this past week that fewer than 10% of COVID cases are transmitted outdoors, And as I mentioned, even the New York Times, which has really carried the water for certain interests and propagandists during the COVID pandemic, even the New York Times attacked CDC for what it called exaggeration, because 10%, that number leaves the misimpression that something like maybe 1 in 10 cases are passed along outdoors, when the true number is far less. As the New York Times put it, statistically insignificant, more like 0.1%, not 10%, more like 1 in 1,000. So again, now our top public health agency is caught wordsmithing or spinning in a way that is not an honest and accurate reflection of the situation. You may remember that I did a story earlier this year about CDC and all of its top vaccine scientists signing off on a false statement that claims studies showed COVID vaccine is effective in people who've already had coronavirus. Well, the studies showed the opposite. And in the story I did, there was a congressman, Representative Thomas Massey, a Republican of Kentucky, who actually recorded CDC. He's got an engineering background and a scientific mind, and he's the one who caught CDC putting out this false information. And he recorded them, top scientists and officials at CDC, as they acknowledged that this information was wrong and yet refused to correct it after promising they would, continued to distribute this false information to medical professionals. And even when they did correct it, finally, the correction was so confusing that it continued to leave the false impression. Again, CDC falsely claiming that vaccine studies showed that the COVID vaccines are effective in people who've already had coronavirus, and that's not the case. Event number three that I wanted to talk about is back to the idea that COVID cases seem to primarily be transmitted inside. There's something that I've been thinking about for a year, ever since I first heard New York Governor Cuomo say this at a news conference, and I looked it up the other day. It was on May 6th that he first said this in 2020. There was a survey that showed early look at the data from 100 New York hospitals, again in May of last year, showed that 66% of new admissions related to coronavirus were people who had been at home. These people had reported self-isolating, and then add to that 66%, 24% of hospital admissions for coronavirus were from nursing homes and congregate or assisted living. So together, 90% of the people who were sick in the hospital in New York with coronavirus in May of 2020 were people who had been staying at home. So the government is giving stay-at-home orders and finding out that most everybody going to the hospital with coronavirus were people who had stayed home. This jibes with common sense, by the way, and with what some top medical officials had told me at the time, but didn't want to say publicly because the media had taken really uninformed stances in some cases and taken sides and politicized so much. But taken together, these stats suggest that the stay-at-home orders were responsible for the vast majority of hospitalizations or serious illnesses. But you haven't really heard people talk about that. Instead of closing the beaches and parks and telling people to stay indoors, the government and public health officials should have, if these stats are right, encouraged everybody to get outside, to go to the beaches and parks, to get fresh air, to not stay holed up in their homes. After a short break, we will talk about event number four in a series of four recent events that are relevant to what we're discussing today, and you'll see how I think it all fits together.
You've probably heard that you should be eating more seafood. Now, my doctor tells me that all the time. It's a good idea. But maybe the seafood counter is intimidating to you, or you aren't quite sure how to prepare it. That's why you need Wild Alaskan Company. The founder comes from a long line of Alaskan commercial fishermen, so they are experts in getting the highest quality, sustainably sourced seafood right to your plate. They believe that what you eat matters, and I do too. And as a member of Wild Alaskan Company, you'll receive a variety of delicious, perfectly portioned, wild-caught seafood delivered right to your door. And you get access to their team as well. For any questions about recipes, cooking tips, what a great idea. It's not just buying fish, you get the support to cook it as well. They are so confident in the taste and quality of Alaska seafood that they offer a 100% money-back guarantee. That's a pretty good deal. Change or pause your delivery date anytime so they make it easy. Right now, get $15 off your first box of wild-caught seafood when you visit wildalaskancompany.com/justnews for $15 off your first box. That's a great deal. So go today to wildalaskancompany.com/justnews. You'll get the best prices, the best food, and help cooking some great seafood.
We're back, and we're talking about four seemingly separate events that I think connect together to prove an important point that's helpful to all of us to keep in mind. Event number four, a really weird incident with a Dr. Peter Hotez, who has become a TV and media spokesman for all things pro-vaccine, oftentimes, in my view, claiming falsely that anybody who asks questions about vaccine safety or reports on vaccine safety, like I do, falsely claiming that those people are anti-vaxxers and anti-vaccine. This is the rhetoric and propaganda that's largely been promulgated by the vaccine industry and its partners in the media. So he's become pretty well known for this. And earlier this week, I logged onto Twitter and found myself barraged by attacks. And the source of the attacks, I learned as I followed the trail, was false information that Hotez had tweeted out about me. Apparently, from what I could piece together, he was claiming to be a victim, the victim of horrible attacks by the vaccine deniers, the anti-vax crowd, after he said he had been doxed or his personal information published in an article in a website called Natural News. Well, I don't know anything about that, but as he was getting his followers all ginned up about these supposedly unfair attacks on him and how he said he was being victimized in the worst kind of way, he added in his tweet that I had endorsed this article and these positions. He said I had done so on my website, CherylAckison.com, which was, of course, news to me because I had neither heard of, seen, nor read the Natural News article that he referred to or its positions that he claimed I endorsed. And to this day, in fact, as I record this podcast, I still have not seen or read the article. But his 161,700 followers were very upset that I had supposedly done this to him. And his tweet, in fact, connected me to an effort to urge people to contact him, quote, providing contact info, phones, and emails, as if I had somehow endorsed or provided personal information so that people could harass him. And he also linked me with an effort to compare him to Mengele, sending image after image of Nuremberg. Again, I have no idea what he's talking about here, but he's really getting his followers worked up. He went on in his Twitter thread, the one in which he named me, to further associate me with those who he called white nationalists, Nazi and Nuremberg obsessions people, and, quote, a bunch of satanic stuff, people saying they will pray for me, but they know I'm the devil. In other words, he's getting harassed, he says, by these types of people, and I'm either part of it or endorsing it or even leading it. I fairly quickly reached out to Hotez directly on Twitter and told them that his tweets were false and defamatory, but instead of removing and retracting his statements for a time, he publicly engaged and continued accusing me of doing something he said, quote, dangerous, claiming that I had, quote, made up all these terrible things about him and that I was responsible for causing unwell people to attack him. I heard from all kinds of people based on this false information. In fact, tennis icon Martina Navratilova, big hero of mine from my childhood years, she responded to the Hotez tweets by telling her 348,800 followers, quote, Cheryl clearly likes to stir things up in a criminal way. Shame on her and everyone else spewing this crap. And Hotez has been a widely quoted coronavirus and vaccine authority during the pandemic and epidemic, all over the media. And while he ultimately removed his false information about me, who knows how many people will actually see that that's gone. Certainly, he's left a very harmful and damaging impression with a lot of people who will never know that his tweets were false. Why was I targeted in this way? Is it because I have sources inside the government and in the scientific community, and I have covered vaccine safety issues? Is it to make sure that I am somehow as marginalized as possible so that what I report, if it's harmful to certain industry interests, will not be considered seriously? I can't say for sure, but it reminds me of earlier in this pandemic, maybe some of you remember, the New York Times did a bizarre story falsely labeling me as a coronavirus doubter when I had done very little coverage of coronavirus and certainly had never expressed anything close to doubt. Ultimately, I had to hire an attorney, and I got the New York Times to make a series of 4 or 5 corrections. Of course, again, probably nobody saw the corrections, but it kind of reminds me of that, this managed information environment where certain interests or propagandists are able to put false information into the public domain for their own purposes, not always known to us. Well, how do all of these things fit together? Dr. Fauci's wordsmithing, disinformation from the CDC, the stay-at-home orders, Dr. Hotez, propaganda, false information. I really think very little of this would have been possible 10 years ago, maybe even 6 years ago. It's only possible today because of the highly managed and manipulation information environment that we've been discussing for the last couple of years. The lurch toward this trend began in about 2016, where the news allowed itself to become a big part of it. Instead of providing that balance that would reject propaganda and talking points and provide accurate information, the news became part of the propaganda and the talking points and the effort to silence certain voices, views, and studies while promulgating others. And they've made it where, too often, only one side of a story, only one piece of supposed science, only one set of viewpoints is allowed to be discussed. I mean, there's a whole bunch of young people today, and even some older people that either never knew or have forgotten, there was a time when the news would consider many different viewpoints, when the news understood that science is rarely settled. In fact, the people who say things like science is settled are almost never scientists, because true scientists know that science is very rarely settled. But the news used to understand that sometimes accuracy and truth only comes when many viewpoints are discussed, not just the prevailing or establishment or consensus views. In fact, when it comes to science, a lot of accuracy and revelations have only come when considering studies and views and science and reporting that today is frankly not allowed at many news organizations, because the media outlets claim, when they can't possibly know, claim to know the truth up front and in the discussion. It reminds me of the most logical question that was asked at the beginning of the pandemic that we believe started in Wuhan, China. The most logical question was, did it perhaps have anything to do with the Wuhan Institute of Virology, where they were studying bat coronavirus, where their lead virologist had done gain-of-function research, making bat coronavirus infectious in people? Certainly it's a logical question to ask, but if you remember early on, when people even brought this subject up, they were controversialized. They were called conspiracy theorists. I remember the Washington Post and others published articles that said this theory had been debunked when it hadn't even been fully investigated, when it was impossible to even know whether it could be debunked or not, because we simply hadn't gotten the data or the information from China that we would need to know if it was debunked or not. And as I've pointed out in my reporting, some of these same people who were claiming that this lab theory had been debunked, including Fauci and others, didn't disclose at the time, and neither did the media, that they had the appearance of a conflict of interest on this issue, that they had approved taxpayer money to fund the Wuhan Institute of Virology, that they had been involved in research, controversial research, with the scientists at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. None of that was said at the time, because this is a managed information landscape in which only certain things are allowed to be said. What are we missing because of this? What public health risks have we missed because we haven't allowed a wholesome discussion of a variety of scientific viewpoints in an uncertain situation? And if you ask me, it all goes back to the initial discussion about masks. This was a pivotal and defining moment in terms of the confidence the public felt that it could get from public health officials and CDC on a very dangerous and uncertain situation. You remember in the beginning that the government was saying a variety of things, but the upshot was that we don't need masks, shouldn't wear masks in the general public. We were told some variety of either they don't work or they aren't necessary or they'll do more harm than good because we don't know how to wear them properly and can't possibly learn. And then you remember after a period of time, in one single day, that story changed. There was a 180. Masks do work. You do need to wear them. In fact, you should wear them all the time. And public health officials and some in the media acted as though the first advice had never happened, and that people who were skeptical of the new advice, well, they were just treated like crazy people. Why on earth would you think that you shouldn't wear a mask? And it's not that I'm faulting public health officials or anybody else for not really knowing, if that's the case, what was the right path with an emerging novel virus that nobody's ever dealt with before. Of course, that's going to be the case. The problem lies in insisting at any given moment that you do know the absolute truth once and for all, and that no other discussion is allowed. Because then when people find out that was wrong, or you change your mind, or more is known, you're asking them, you as public health officials, to buy in on the new advice without closing the necessary loop, going back and explaining what happened, and explaining that even the advice today may be amended again. You don't have to pretend to be omniscient. Despite what seems to be a pretty big consensus, I think it's to everybody's benefit to allow a dialogue and discussion on these crucial issues. As I said, I spoke to some very respected public health officials that differed greatly with some of the advice being given in the beginning, with some of the reporting that was going on, but didn't dare speak publicly about it for fear of being controversialized and attacked. Two scientists specifically told me that they thought a lot of the guidance we were getting was completely misguided, but they didn't want to say so, quote, for fear of appearing to contradict Dr. Fauci. And in the end, it looks like they were right, by the way. These are some of the very scientists who told me at the beginning, without me knowing one way or another what the truth was, but told me at the beginning that it was a bad idea to tell people to stay home and isolate. This environment where people aren't allowed to say these things, where the media won't consider different views, it makes accurate information more difficult to get and wrong information more difficult to expose and correct. So I think we should all keep this in mind. It's more important than ever to seek out your own research and information, even as the information environment makes it harder to find. In fact, I think that we can largely take our cues by seeing what the media and public health officials and government officials are censoring or controversializing, by what they're saying is contrary to logic and reason, by what they're shutting down, by the discussion they won't let be had, by the sources that they attack, by them insisting that certain information or people shouldn't be heard, or the information shouldn't be available for you to consider. That should tell you that powerful interests are working hard to shape your views on something important to them, and it should result in prompting you to seek more information on the topic that they don't want to be heard. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Check out justthenews.com, and don't forget to subscribe to the Cheryl Akison podcast, my other podcast, Full Measure After Hours, and all the Just the News podcasts wherever you like to listen. Do your own research, make up your own mind, think for yourself.
You've probably heard that you should be eating more seafood. Now, my doctor tells me that all the time. It's a good idea. But maybe the seafood counter is intimidating to you, or you aren't quite sure how to prepare it. That's why you need Wild Alaskan Company. The founder comes from a long line of Alaskan commercial fishermen, so they are experts in getting the highest quality, sustainably sourced seafood right to your plate. They believe that what you eat matters, and I do too. And as a member of Wild Alaskan Company, you'll receive a variety of delicious, perfectly portioned, wild-caught seafood delivered right to your door. And you get access to their team as well. For any questions about recipes, cooking tips, what a great idea. It's not just buying fish, you get the support to cook it as well. They are so confident in the taste and quality of Alaska seafood that they offer a 100% money-back guarantee. That's a pretty good deal. Change or pause your delivery date anytime so they make it easy. Right now, get $15 off your first box of wild-caught seafood when you visit wildalaskancompany.com/justnews for $15 off your first box. That's a great deal. So go today to wildalaskancompany.com/justnews. You'll get the best prices, the best food, and help cooking some great seafood.